All right, the book of Jonah. Am I on? There we go. The book of Jonah, chapter 4. Jonah, chapter 4, verse 6. Jonah, chapter 4, the Bible says, "And the Lord God prepared a gourd and made it to come up over Jonah, that he might have a shadow over his head to deliver him from his grief." So Jonah was exceeding glad because of the gourd, but God prepared a worm when the morning rose the next day, and it smote the gourd that it withered. And it came to pass when the sun did arise that God prepared a vehement east wind. And the sun beat upon the head of Jonah that he fainted and wished in himself to die and said, "It is better for me to die than to live." And God said to Jonah, "Doest thou well to be angry for the gourd?" Is that a fair question? Wait, is this... should you really have that attitude? Is that really the way you ought to feel about the situation? And he said, "I do well to be angry, even unto death." Yep, I'm right. It is right for me to have this bad attitude. I have children, you know, and we know about this thing of attitude. Whenever circumstances change, right? Even a very small change in circumstances. And, you know, I have a three-year-old son. And you know how it works if you've been a parent, that, you know, here's a certain chair at the table. And if for like three meals in a row they sit in that chair, that is now their chair. That's their chair. And if you say, "Can you sit over here?" That's a problem. It might be in a better chair where you're asking to sit. It might be in a better location. That's not really the important thing. The thing is that it's my chair, and now you're telling me to move. Now, my circumstances have changed. And you say, "Yeah, that's the problem that kids have." Well, that's kind of a problem that people have. It's just grown-ups are better at making good excuses. They're better at giving the reason why it's good for me to be angry. But it's a human problem. In our nature, circumstances change even a tiny amount, and it's very easy, it's instinct, and if we allow ourselves in our flesh to get a very rotten, bad attitude. Jonah's circumstances changed. And not only did he have such a bad attitude, it's even, he was despairing of life. He had what parents call a temper tantrum, right? So this is him having a terrible, bad attitude for no reason, and yet, even when questioned, no, I do well to be angry. This is right for me to have this bad attitude over a gourd. Over a gourd. You know, I don't know what variety of gourds. They had different varieties here, but I grabbed something, you know. Right? Is that worth having a bad attitude over? You know, this plant. You know, these things grow really easy around here. You know, we threw a few zucchini seeds in our garden. They grew, and we went over to go to the stands, and you can get them everywhere. You know, down here, Wickham's, and over where they're selling every variety of gourd you can think of, and pumpkins, and neck pumpkins, and honey, all this crazy stuff, right? And they had little different varieties back then, and they would use them for dry them out and use them for drinking bottles and stuff. And they grew kind of wild around there. So here's this vine, these big old leaves, and it's just a gourd. And yet, here it dies, and here's this change of circumstances, and he's so angry over this tiny change in circumstances, rather than looking for, I don't know, maybe some other place that has better shade. I mean, that's what I would think, right? Rather than asking, what is God trying to teach me here? Rather than how did I get here? What do I need to learn? What should I do differently? Should I, all of those things? No, he just in angry, I want my gourd back. Not looking, okay, where should I go? What should I do next? Should I even be sitting here on this hilltop in the direct sun, in the heat of the day? Is this even a good idea in the first place? He doesn't ask those questions. He's just sitting there. God had improved in circumstance. He was sitting there miserable to start with. And then God gave him the gourd to give him the shade to help him in his grief. It says God is being merciful to deliver him from his grief. That shade helped his attitude. It helped that God did something nice to him. And it took him not even a day to start taking that for granted. For just not even a day for him to get so used to that blessing that it's just the way it's supposed to be, and this is now my gourd. And I'm sitting here, and so much that this worm comes along and eats the vine, and the leaves wither, and now he's angry at this terrible change in circumstances, forgetting that 24 hours earlier he was in just as bad or worse a circumstance. It's just it was there for a moment, and now he's got this terrible attitude. And I've got to ask myself how often, and it may not be something as silly sounding as a gourd, but it's whatever it is that changes in my life. It may be a significant bad change. It may be something that unquestionably is, this is a burden, this is a trial. But sometimes it's just different. Sometimes it's for the better. It doesn't matter. It's so easy to get an attitude of, hey, where's that money I'm supposed to be getting? You know, well, where's that thing? Hey, where's the this? Where's the bonus that I deserved? Well, I'm not sure what that bonus is. But we think that way. Hey, who took my seat? You know, this is the pew I sit in every Sunday. That's my parking spot. Right? You know, husband, it's easy. It's easy. If you have a wonderful wife like I do, you know, hey, why aren't my clothes laid out? Well, hold on. Am I paying her to lay out my clothes in the morning to put on? No, she does it because she loves me, and here she's done something because she loves me, and how easily I could get a bad attitude, and suddenly it's not there. And wait a minute, where's that? Well, that I never even asked her to do it in the first place. She did it out of love. So why am I even? Well, where's this? Hey, what this weather? You know, what happened to the nice sunny weather? Well, who promised you nice sunny weather today? You know, the weatherman, is he controlling the weather? You know, what is supposed to be, or it's supposed to have happened this way, or so and so was supposed to do this. He was, huh? Like, how did you hire him to do that? No, but they're supposed to be. I come to this church and it's supposed to be like this, and someone is supposed to greet me like this. Someone's supposed to, you know, someone was supposed to notice my hairdo, you know? And so we get that it was so easy. The littlest things are sometimes the biggest things, and here's a change. And wait a minute, I'm so used to this happening this way, or I'm so expecting it to happen this way. Suddenly there's a change, and my attitude is like this prophet pouting over a gourd. I do right to be angry, even unto death. That worm ate my gourd. It's not fair. That gourd is supposed to be there. It's supposed to last for years and years. It's supposed to be there giving me shade. That's the way it was supposed to be. The gourd that, you know, God continues and says, then said the Lord, thou hast pity on the gourd for which thou hast not labored, neither madest to grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. And of course, the lesson here is about his attitude towards that city he was looking at. If you don't know the story, he's looking at the city of Nineveh, hoping God will send down fire from heaven and destroy it. And there's a reason behind feeling that way. I mean, it sounds petty, but if you study history and you know something about this city and what it has done and will do to hit Jonah's people, there's good reason, whether it's right or not. It's not random that he's wishing for God to send down fire from heaven and destroy the city. And God is showing mercy, and he's ticking down the days and hoping, why isn't it destroyed? Why isn't it gone yet? He's sitting there to watch the fireworks, and it doesn't happen. And again, an expectation, it's not happening the way he wanted it to. Of course, God teaches this lesson about his mercy towards the city. But tonight I want to look at his attitude just towards the gourd. There's a bigger story here for the rest of Jonah about God's mercy towards this people. But we often just have the bad attitude of some just tiny little circumstance of life. and how it can hold us back, how it can blind us to what God wants us to do next, to opportunities to serve and to minister to other Christians. One attitude of like, hey, this person always did that and now they didn't. They were supposed to do that, and now I have a bad attitude to them, even though, like, I'm not paying them to do that. Whatever, but I have a bad attitude. Now circumstances have changed. I don't have a bad attitude. And now my opportunity to show love of Christ to another Christian is gone, and I'm blinded to obvious things. We're going to look at the story, and there's some very, very obvious things that from the nice, safe distance about a little less than 3,000 years and the other side of the world, it's really easy for us to pick on Jonah here and see, like, come on, what were you thinking? This is a really obvious one, and there's very obvious things he's missing as we look through this. We're very obvious, it's like, come on, what were you thinking? And it's easy to pick on Jonah, but when we, in a tiny change of circumstances, get that attitude, we miss the most obvious things. And so I ask myself, going to this passage, how can I not miss those things? These obvious things that it could fix my attitude, and how do I keep from a bad attitude reaction to a tiny change in circumstance? How do I keep that from derailing me, stopping me from ministering, stopping me from learning, stopping me from growing, or stopping my opportunity to reach someone for Christ? And my attitude can absolutely stand in the way of me as a Christian serving God, and that attitude creeps up just as, again, it's easy to pick on a three-year-old for having a bad attitude about some little thing changing. No, this is not my classroom, that's my class. No, she's not supposed to be my different teacher in Sunday school. No, you're not my teacher, where's Mrs. So-and-so? This is the way it's supposed to be. Well, I mean, she wasn't, it's supposed to be this way. It's supposed to sit here, you're supposed to do that because we've done it before. And the tiniest change and you have this bad attitude. But we can all be like that. I mean, and Jonah's not the only. We could go through example after example in the Bible of preachers, of prophets, men of God. Everything from Elijah running out and he wishing he was dead, and there's no one else left just because he went right from the mountaintop seeing fire from heaven, and now he's running for his life, and it was just an attitude thing. And time and time again, you see these. The preacher, Moses at times, yes, sometimes he stood strong, sometimes he had that bad attitude, and he was ready to give up. And I got to ask myself, I'm not immune. How do I keep, because circumstances will change. Things in my life, you know, however I'm living right now, the things I own, the stuff I have, it will not last. Okay, my car, no matter how many times I fix it, it will not last forever. Okay, eventually, there's going to be some part breaks on my car that it's not going to be worth buying a new part and putting it in, or the amount of time or labor, you know, it's not going to be worth it, okay? And I'm going to have a different car, right? My cell phone will not last forever. If you're not aware, they make them to not last forever. The lithium batteries in the phones, they eventually will short out inside and expand, and you can't say, I'm going to have this same phone for the next 30 years. It won't operate. And then, of course, they stop giving updates, and eventually that means they start collecting viruses and stuff. They make it that way on purpose because they want you to buy a new phone every few years. So as much as they say, no, I don't want to change, I want to keep it, you know, sometimes you're stuck. Circumstances are going to change. Your kids are going to grow up. Your health will change. This community will change. You will get new neighbors. Those nice neighbors will move out, and some very annoying ones will move in. It's going to happen. Or maybe just different neighbors. Maybe they're no better or no worse than the previous ones, but you're so used to that. And boy, that can hurt. And I said, well, it's no different than, so what can we learn? What was Jonah missing? Three things he was missing. Number one, he dismissed God's grace. God was doing something by grace. They didn't pay attention to what God was doing at all, and that it was by grace. Grace is unmerited favor. He didn't earn that gourd. Right? It was there, and he didn't earn a second chance. If you know the story, he was in a whale, and he deserved to be digested by that whale. And God had the whale spin him up, and he went and preached, and people got turned, repented, the city repented. God gave him grace. God gave him another chance. And if you look at the situation, God had given him grace, and he didn't deserve it. What we can get used to when we're being blessed and good things are happening in our life and things are going well, we can forget that those things are not because we're such amazing people. It's because we have a good God who's been gracious to us. And here we are receiving God's blessings and things are going great, but we can totally get used to that as in, this is just the way it's supposed to be. Not, wow, I'm blessed of God, but oh, this is just life. And now that's just normal. And any deviation from that, that's a problem. Instead of realizing I'm every day I wake up being blessed of God. That day, as much as the sun was beating down on his head, he had that day. By the way, he had the day before with the shade from the gourd. God gave him that as a blessing. That was God's grace. And waking up the next day and not being dead because of his disobedience to God. I mean, he deserved to be drowned in the sea or chewed up by the whale. I mean, he had disobeyed God. He had gone against God's instruction. And yet, he's receiving God's grace, but he took it for granted, right? And we have something, our life's been going good and things are good, but things aren't good because we're owed that good. Things are going good because God is gracious to us. And if I lose sight of that, then it's so easy to have a terrible attitude when circumstances change. Look, God. Here's a few notes on this about how he dismissed God's grace. Letter A, God solved the problem he couldn't solve. It's actually kind of funny to notice something here. If you go back a few verses, so Jonah went out of the city, verse 5, so Jonah went out of the city and sat on the east side of the city, and there made him a booth and sat under it in the shadow till he might see what would come of the city. You notice here, Jonah tried to make his own shade, and he obviously did a terrible job at it. Right? I mean, this is Jonah had already done his attempt at making a shade for himself as he was sitting there having his pity party on the east side of the city. But he had made some kind of tent or booth or something for himself, and it was obviously terrible because it got so much better when the gourd grew on it and caused it to have more shade, and it got so much more worse and miserable. So his construction abilities were terrible. He couldn't make a little gazebo enough to earn something with a little roof on it to give himself some shade. And here, God, I got it covered. Watch this. God had no problem. God solved it. He couldn't fix it. And we think so often, it's like, hey, look at this thing that's going good in my life. You know, here's my marriage, and there's something, and then all of a sudden I have this problem. Well, hold on. That good I had in the first place, I couldn't have gotten there without God. You see what I'm saying? I'm having a problem with someone else in the church. Well, but for the grace of God, you wouldn't be saved. You wouldn't be a member of this church. You had an unsolvable problem on your way to hell, and God solved that. And now you're nitpicking these details of the solution. You're having a little struggle in here, but forget, you got to get to that point was God's grace. Look, God thought of him while he was ignoring others. Right? So it says this, notice, God prepared this gourd, and he made it to come up over Jonah that he might shadow over his head to deliver him from his grief. God there, I mean, and he was the one having the bad attitude from the start, right? He wasn't supposed to be there. God did not tell him to sit on that hill. We'll get to this, but he shouldn't have even been there. But God still has mercy on him. God is still thinking of him. Oh, look at this grief. He's so sad. He's sitting here in the sun and stuff. And this pathetic little booth he made is just not working at all. It's just it was just the most miserable attempt at making a shade possible, and it's not working. And God has pity on him and has his gourd grow. God is thinking of him. He's not, at the same time, he's not thinking of others. Sometimes when we get into that attitude, we're thinking about ourselves, you know, and we forget that God is people, and God and many other Christians are looking out for us. And I'm not even thinking about others. He's not even thinking about, what about those people in that city? You know, I'm complaining about a little heat from the sun, and I'm asking God to send down fire from heaven and burn up the city. I mean, like, there's a whole disconnect here. And again, that attitude is blocking his thinking. God gave him a chance while he judged others. We're talking about God's grace here, and he's overlooking the fact that he has been given a second chance. And now he has this terrible attitude of God giving them a second chance. And again, when we have attitudes, the first thing to go is our ability to notice our own hypocrisy, right? We get this attitude. Instantly, this attitude is, The key central thing is this: I do well to be angry. Yes, it is justified. No, it's not. We look at it and say, that's ridiculous for you to be angry over a plant that grows one day and dies the next, that you didn't even plant. That is ridiculous, Jonah. But he's in his mind, oh no, that was right. And that's the kind of insanity we get to when we have something changes and we fixate on ourselves and our circumstances. Instead of looking to God, and instead of looking at what God wants to teach us through this, we fixate on, here's this thing that was supposed to be this way, and now it's changed. Now it's not the way it was. That's not the way it's supposed to be. That's not the way I want it to be. And we get this attitude, and that attitude immediately blinds us. And everyone else around us can see our hypocrisy, that we're maybe angry at one person for something that we've been forgiven in 100 other places. You know, Jesus gave that wonderful parable, you know, of the man who was forgiven this huge amount of money and wasn't sent to prison, and then he finds someone that owes him a tiny amount of money and forces the money out of him. And that's what God sees looking down at us. Here we are, we have this attitude, I'm right to do it. Here's the thing. In our minds, in our fleshly, if we can find just one reason to be angry, it overrides everything else. This is how our attitude, why our attitude's so broken. And the fact of the matter is we're surrounded by sinners. We're surrounded by people that make mistakes. So guess what? If you want an excuse to be angry, to have a bad attitude, you will always be able to find it. You know, unless you surround yourself completely with absolute perfect people and live in an absolute perfect world, in a perfect house, and come to a perfect church and drive a perfect car, next on the road with other perfect motorists, you will always find something about the situation you can blame on someone else. You always that and here's the lie the devil is telling you. Forget everything else. There's the only proof you need that it's this change in circumstance that's making you miserable. Yeah. It's all about this thing. It's not about the bigger thing. It's not about God's way. And all the obvious elephants in the room of the fact that, wait, why are you even here on this mountaintop to start off with? What are you even doing here? The very, very obvious things we're looking at here, that, hey, wait, God gave you the gourd in the first place. Why are you angry that it's gone? You know, and there's other ridiculous things that you can ask, like, why don't you just plant another gourd? Why don't you make a better shade? I mean, we can go on and on about, like, the absurdity of the situation, but that's exactly how we are. As soon as we find one reason, then we start, and here's the first one, we ignore all of God's grace. One tiny thing that we can point at that's not grace, that's this person's mistake. This wasn't supposed to be this way. That person cut me off, and if he had followed the traffic rules, he would not have done that. And so the fact that I was speeding when he cut me off, that has nothing to do with it. He cut me off. You know? That's what we get this, and then we just ignore all the other situations for this one little thing, and now that change in circumstance, that scenario, that's the thing we completely fixate on. And as we if we're like this, focusing on some little element of our circumstances, what we cannot see is all of God and everything he's doing. We can be surrounded by the grace of God and the blessings of God all around us. And while we are laser focused on some tiny little thing that's now out of place, we can't see any of it. There was Jonah, one of the most successful preachers in history, having preached to several nations and saw people repent in the greatest nations in the world, and here he was, he just escaped being swallowed by a fish. I mean, wow. And now all these people repented, and he was sitting there, and you get it when, I mean, notice that prophets have bad attitudes as much as all of us. Even though prophets go around with God talking to them. Now, I have the Word of God. I can read the Bible and stuff. But, I mean, they could just hear the voice of God telling them the future. I think it'd be pretty cool to be able to know what was happening tomorrow, to know the future. And to just all the time have God telling me exactly and have a conversation with God the way you would have a conversation with someone else. I mean, that's amazing. And you notice every discouraged prophet in the Bible is so laser focused, they're not, hey, you're literally talking to God Almighty. Thousands of people just repented at your preaching. And all you're focused on is the gourd. But my gourd, I want my gourd back. I want my gourd back. So he dismissed the grace of God. Number two, he overlooked his own responsibility. See, here's the thing. As soon as we find that excuse, why, it's this circumstance. That's why everything's going bad. It's this that changed right here. It's that silly worm's fault. It ate the gourd. And as soon as we focus on that, we kind of ignore the fact that, you know, it actually sometimes is a little bit of our fault. And it is our pride, it is our human nature to focus on, again, as soon as we can find even the tiniest bit that someone else is, even the slightest bit to blame, suddenly we're not to blame at all. But what is he overlooked about his own responsibility? Well, he made decisions. I mean, the obvious elephant in the room here is that he decided to sit on that hill. God did not tell him to sit on that hill. He was sitting outside the city. Now understand, he had just preached, and the whole city, including the most powerful man in the world, the king of Nineveh, had repented at his preaching. At this moment, he could be sitting in the palace eating dinner with the king of Nineveh teaching him the Bible. Think about it. He could be sitting there, or he could be on his way back home. He did the mission. He completed the job. He could be going, but he could be back home by now, you know? He could be sitting there having a successful preaching back in his home, back in Israel with the people there. It was entirely his decision that put him in this spot. But it was that worm that ate the gourd. So who's the fault in this situation? Him for being there or the worm for eating the gourd? It was the worm's fault, of course. And he was right to be angry. Even unto death. And that's the way, it's our nature. We ignoring our own decisions, not only that, his expectations. No one ever promised him he would have a shade tomorrow. No, what is it to him what random plants grow on the hillside next to Nineveh? He's not even supposed to be there, but he had an expectation. Well, if God blessed me today, then God has got to bless me tomorrow. Otherwise, something's wrong, and I'm not getting what I'm owed. Look, if God's blessing you today, he doesn't owe you blessings tomorrow. That's an expectation that he alone made, and oh, how much we suffer ourselves because of expectations that we invented that we're now disappointed because other people aren't living up to them, or reality isn't living up to them, or God isn't. I thought this would work. Well, it didn't, okay? Maybe the problem is you weren't thinking right. No. I'm always thinking right. This is the way it was supposed to be. That gourd was supposed to be there for my shade. That's my gourd. It's supposed to be there for my shade. And that's how it's supposed to work now. Right? I mean, why would you expect the gourd to be there? No one promised it. No one, I mean, it's there, but it has to be there. Right? You think about it. If you back in, like, for example, in 2 Kings, right? There's this story of Naaman the leper. If you know the story, right? And he comes to the prophet, and the prophet says, "Go, you know, dip 7 times in the Jordan River." You know the story, right? But listen, what it says in 2 Kings 5:11. He says, "But Naaman was wroth and went away, and said, 'Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call in the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper.'" That's what he thought. So Naaman went, so I'm going to the prophet, and he's going to come out to me, and call in the name of God, and clap his hands, and do some big show, and boom. But instead, he sent his servant out to say, "Oh, yeah, he's busy, but message for you, just go dip 7 times in the Jordan River, you'll be clean, no more leprosy." And so, look at this. Naaman has a bad attitude and walks away from a cure for an uncurable disease. I mean, he walks away from this is an uncure, and there's the cure, and he gets all angry, and he has this attitude because why? The prophet didn't meet his expectations. I thought he was going to clap his hands. Instead, he said, "Go dip yourself in the river." I mean, from a distance, that sounds ridiculous, and to all of Naaman's men, that sounded ridiculous. why? But he had built up the expectations. People around him didn't have any expectations. Okay, he said, follow. He's going to go talk to this prophet. We'll see if he... And the prophet says this. Okay, do that. No, it gets all angry. And then they have to talk him out of it, right? He's going in there saying, you know, if he had asked you to do some big thing like, you know, climb to the top of a mountain or give him a mountain of gold or what, you would have done whatever to get the cure for leprosy. He asked, it's a really obvious thing. The absurdity of walking away for the cure on the cure for leprosy because the prophet didn't do it the way you wanted to is absurd. But how many times are we blinded to the obvious thing here because I had an expectation. I thought it was going to work out this way. This is the way I wanted to do. This is what I want. I went to talk to someone and I expected him to react in a certain way and they reacted differently. You know, this is not the way I thought the conversation would go. So now what do? We get angry. No, I thought you were going to. But why did you expect that? We never sit there and because we build up these expectations and they're not rational. Why did he expect that Gord to be there? I don't know. And by the way, he overlooked his own responsibility when it came to inaction. I mean, again, the most obvious thing here is that I don't really need to spell this out, but why was he still sitting there, okay? If the gourd died and you were sitting under the gourd to get shade, I mean, it doesn't take, like, you don't have to be a neuroscientist or you know, thermodynamics or, I mean, move somewhere else. Come on. I mean, find another place. Look, there's a palm tree over there. Look, there's a cave over there. Hey, look, there's a whole city full of houses. They have these things called roofs, you know? It's amazing. It's amazing. You know, it's this amazing technology that, you know, what will they think of next? Here in Nineveh, they invented roofs on their houses. And you walk into a house, and your head's not hot anymore. Amazing. I mean, that's so, right? We have a certainty. But how many times we're like that? You know, oh, things, this changed, oh, this person, no, and oh, this is so terrible. And look, a change happens, and we just sit there brooding over the change in circumstance instead of saying, oh, well, let's move. Okay, if this isn't working anymore, I'm going to do this over here. Why am I still in this situation if I didn't need to be there in the first place? And now the change of circumstances, maybe it's God trying to get me to move. You know, maybe I need to start doing it. And instead, I'm just sitting there doing nothing, and then we're blaming the worm. The worm didn't get super glue. You know, the worm's not coming over there with a super glue and super glue you to the sand there. It didn't work that way. No one's keeping you there except your own attitude. It's keeping you right there, complaining about the same thing again and again and again. And, you know, but I'm right to be mad, even unto death. And but you're the one sitting there. So he didn't look at God's grace. He ignored he was blind to his own responsibility. And thirdly, he ignored God's perspective. God's perspective. This is what he was blind to. How does this situation look to God? Remember, he was focused. Yes, I do right to be angry. Okay, imagine your God looking at you, make the gourd grow, kill the gourd. I want to die. Does that look rational from God's perspective at all? No. But here it is, you're so angry, you're upset, your fixation on the change in circumstance has made you blind to the bigger picture. And it's not because God doesn't let you in on some of why he's doing this. God's going to do that. He's going to say it out loud to him. I mean, he's a prophet after all. He knew God's big plan in this. He knew that from the beginning, and he's blind to it, to God's perspective. Now look how God sees the situation differently. Because that's the thing. You know, how do kids get over this? Right? We talked about kids have a problem where there's a little bit of change and now, everything's wrong. How do they get over it? They get over it by listening to their parents explain the situation. Listen, and if they trust their parents, and the parents say, you know, this is okay. In fact, this over here is better. You know, we're throwing out those old shoes. Your favorite, I know they're your favorite tennis shoes, but you know, your toes are sticking out the front. And winter is coming. You know, and the holes, you know, it's not going to be very comfortable. These brand new shoes that fit you and don't have any holes in them, they're much better. But those are my favorite shoes. Okay, but you're going to like these new shoes a whole lot more. And a kid can get over that attitude of a change in circumstances when they will trust their parents' perspective. And I'm going to trust that dad knows what he's talking about and put the new shoes on. That's exactly how we can overcome it. That's exactly how Jonah. Stop fixating on, I know the situation. Yes, I've decided in my infinite wisdom that I do right to be angry right now. Okay, God thinks otherwise. The question is, are you going to stay right where you're at? Or are you going to trust what God is saying and allow him to change the way you're looking at the situation, the perspective? So here's three questions he could have asked that would have changed his whole thinking. He could have asked this question, how does God see ownership? That's kind of the first thing we're looking at. Look at what God is saying here. So God is talking to him now, right? It says, thou hast pity on the gourd for which thou hast not labored, neither madest to grow. Jonah's there saying, I want my gourd back. And God is saying, it's not your gourd. It's not yours. It never was yours to the, who actually owns that plant? It's not you. This is where I have to ask myself, I'm getting upset, here's something in my life that's not working right, something fell apart, and there's a change in my circumstance. Okay, whose family is this? Whose house is this? Who blessed me with this house, this car? Well, I prayed and asked God, can you help me find a new car that'll work? Well, oh yeah. The things that someone, oh, hey, this is my seat. Well, is it your seat? Or is it the Lord's? And so here's the thing he's looking at, and he says, and hold on, you did not plant that gourd. I did. Wait, let's review here for the sake of making sure we got this straight here. And the Lord prepared a gourd and made it to come up over Jonah, right? And then the Lord prepared a worm, right? All the way, actually, it's an interesting study. Look at how many times in the book of Jonah that phrase is used, the Lord prepared. The Lord prepared the wind. The Lord prepared the whale. The Lord prepared the gourd. The Lord prepared the wind. The Lord prepared the wind, the sun, the heat. God is the one that's been doing all of this the whole time. Jonah, you say, I do right to be angry. Why are you right to be angry about something that's not yours? And notice God's two points he makes there, two different points. You didn't labor for it, and you didn't make it grow. You didn't work for it, but even if you had, I'm the one that gave the increase. He wasn't a farmer, but let's say he was. Let's say you did. We have some farmers in the church. I think we have some farmers in the room here. And you go out, and many of us garden, and some of us do it for a living, some of us just for the fun of it. And there are things we labor over, okay? He could have taken a seed out of a and planted it and made sure he pulled the weeds, and he could have worked hard, you know, plowing up the field, making it all, doing everything and protecting it from the animals and stuff and all this kind of stuff. And he could have labored over it, but still, he said, well, then that's my gourd. Well, hold on. Who made it grow? We forget the God of creation. Every good gift cometh from the Lord. Every good gift cometh from the Lord. Our perspective changes so much when we look at our life. And here's the thing. Who made Jonah grow? And we forget what a miracle it is. You know, this plant that comes and it grows, and we just take it for granted. In fact, and all the world around us, we say we'll reject like evolution, for example, but we're subtly letting it bleed over on us. Because part of their thinking is they have to think that animals and plants just kind of is a natural thing that just happens. You know, by accident, dirt makes plants and animals. Just by accident. Like the dirt made it. And we accidentally start thinking that way. that this is so simple, that we take life for granted. So the debate we're having in this country today over whether a life is valuable, a life developing in the womb, we take it, and it's actually at odds. Their thinking is so at odds with science because they're desperate to not let you know. They don't want you to see ultrasounds or even more advanced imaging or to understand the complexity and the amazing miracle that life is. I just a little illustration. I know. Sorry if this it seems nerdy and complex as an illustration. That's the point. Okay, so bear with me for a second. But if you want to know just how advanced life is, you need to talk to someone called a molecular biologist. So here I described a random scientific paper by a molecular biologist here, and it's looking at a tiny little molecule. This paper here, it's got all the pictures and stuff, lots of great big words and stuff like that, and looking at it as the most complex machine. Because you see, when we look at nature, we think, well, this is kind of a plant, this gourd is just kind of just a random blob, but it's not. The complexity is just too small to see. If you even look at a bacteria or an amoeba, it's immensely complex, but it's just a blob under the microscope. It's a fact of how small it is. Well, molecular biologists uses amazing techniques to see things that are smaller than a microscope can see. They can't necessarily see them. They have to do a lot of math and make a computer model to see what the shape is. But then you realize that inside our cells are machines incredibly complex. And if you look at the complex, if you've ever seen a video of like a car factory with robots building cars, we think of that as complex. But if you were to say, and you can just bring it up tonight if you're interested. Just put into YouTube or something. Look for a video called "The Inner Life of a Cell." It's just a little video clip of what inside a cell looks like. An unfathomably more complex. One of the most interesting things that they've noticed is we think of complex. We think of our invention, how great we are, right? In what we built. And what we caused to grow. And we think there's modern man's invention, we think of like the electric motor, right? Rotary motors, that's what makes all the factories work and all our cars work and stuff. Like, you know, like a thing I ripped off a computer here, right? You got a little motor that spins here, you got four little, and you know it's made by man and very complex. It's not just a blob, there's four different electromagnet coils. You see little coils there, they energize, you put the electricity, there's a microchip that energizes them in sequence, and the magnet in here, and it spins around. It's all very complex stuff. Obviously, a very intelligent engineer invented this, right? But what if we found in nature an electric motor that spun? Naturally. Well, in fact, we have. And there's one in every cell in your body, a rotary electric motor. And it actually does a lot. This article here shows the diagrams of it. It's, you probably can't see it here, but it's this rotary electric motor in every cell in your body. That what this does is it manufactures something. It uses electricity, but it's so small, it's the smallest you can make it. Each coil in this motor here is energized by a whole round coil of wire and a whole lot of electrons and a whole bunch of electric current going through to energize it. This is so small that one proton, one positive charge, the smallest possible amount of electricity you could have, is what energizes one of the portions of the rotor. So it's a rotary electric engine, but instead of a whole electromagnet, it's just one proton, the smallest thing. You cannot physically ever make a smaller electric motor than this. It spins at thousands of RPM. We think of like a motor. Okay, so like a motor. Like this is us advanced, right? Here's an advanced piece of technology, right? You've got a battery. We know someone engineered this, right? Because we got a battery here. Electricity goes from the battery to this electric motor that has different coils and that spins around. And then it has something attached to it that I can fabricate stuff with. So I can, you know, build a house with it. We think, wow, I'm so smart. But this little tiny motor in every one of your cells, it's called ATP synthase. Okay, again, so really, really, oh yeah, that's a great name. Okay, molecular biologists don't want you to know about this stuff because, well, unless they do, but you hear about it because it sounds complex. They give you big names. But it's just a little electric motor, and it's not just an electric motor. Attached to it is a whole factory that makes stuff. So it's a rotary, and it's three different chambers, so it can make three things at once, and it makes molecules. Now, when chemists do chemistry, they just mix chemicals together and just hope they smash into each other and make some chemicals. This is like 200 years more advanced than our most advanced chemistry, if we ever get there. It's literally this machine, a complex machine, that grabs a certain molecule and then grabs another molecule and literally aligns them just right and clicks them together like this. And then lets it go and then grabs another one and another one and it's doing a chemical reaction that you can't do by just mixing chemicals. You can only do by actually grabbing the molecules and clicking them together in just the right place. And there are three of these little machines attached on a drive shaft. Yes, it's a rotary motor that doesn't go back and forth. It goes around and around. Electric motor, rotary motor. There's a drive shaft that comes up, and there's a cam on top of that, just like the cam in the crankshaft of your car. It works exactly the same way, but it's like three pistons attached to it. This scientific article shows a what it would look like if it were a rotary engine here. So it shows you probably can't see it, but it shows the equivalent diagram of it's like one of those airplane, the old-fashioned airplane engines that have a crankshaft in the middle and the pistons that go around the outside. It works just like that with three different pistons, a camshaft in the middle, and each one of these pistons is a whole machine that makes molecules. And it's sitting there turning at 1,000 RPM. Each rotation, it makes three more molecules. And these molecules that it's making are the most important molecule in your body. They're what power every other thing in your body. So all the muscle fibers, they're like these molecules it's making are tiny batteries that go and they power the muscle fibers to make your muscles contract, your heartbeat. So for example, these little machines, you find way more of them in your heart than anywhere else because your heart has to just keep pumping without stopping, right? And so there are not just one or two of them, in your body. Every cell has a few billion of them. You have we're not sure the exact number, but so these are kind of rough numbers. But, you have 37-something trillion cells in your body. So basically it comes out to you basically have 100 billion of these electric motors spinning in your body right now, every second that you're alive. And every single thing that happens in your body is powered by them. A mechanical machine with a spinning, it's just, there's a battery. The battery is powered by the sugar that you eat. So the sugar makes the battery go. The electrons, it's electrical current, it's electric. Electric motor spins, machine, camshaft, does it all. They're spinning at thousands of RPM, quietly, you're not hearing it. And there's 100 billion of them in your body right now. Every second, and not just your body, including the gourd and every single living creature on Earth. So every bacteria, yeast, you name it. This is the same machine, very complex, is in the simplest of life forms that we've found has the same machine. So that is complicated. So that's what I say to bring home the point. Jonah, you didn't work hard to plant that seed and make that gourd grow. But even if you had worked crazy hard growing your garden, you didn't make it grow. I did. From God's perspective, whose gourd is it? And the problems you have, the thing you're so worried about in your life, who really did it? But we ignore the fact that the life that I have is a miracle from God. Because here's the thing. He's getting to the point where saying, I'm despairing of life. And he's taking something that belongs to God and is a masterpiece of God's goodness, and saying it is of no value. And the same thing is true if you take something else God made, like, say, a marriage that God made and it's precious to God, and you decide because of some change of circumstance that now that is of no value. Well, whose is it? Who made the institution of marriage? I can't change it. It's from God. Or you're to take a child, a life, and say it's of no value. Or the church of the living God, the church that is the Lord's, that he made and he built upon the rock, and you say, well, I don't like the change, I don't like they changed the color on the pews. I don't like it, this is not right, it's not, pastor got a new hymnal, this is terrible, the numbers are all different, I'm leaving, I'm going to a different church. Right? And as silly as it is, but that's how we get. We take something that belongs to God. We pretend it belongs to us. There's two other questions he asked really quick here. He could ask this, what is God trying to accomplish? What is God trying to accomplish? And it's obvious here what God's trying to accomplish. He spells it out. He's trying to accomplish Jonah thinking differently. God created the whole scenario with the gourd so we can realize how foolish his thinking is so that he can apply it to the whole city. And wait, hold on. If you have that attitude about like your gourd dying, what kind of attitude shall I? Because this city belongs to me. And from God's perspective, there's something bigger that God is doing. And we so worry, we laser focus on this tiny little circumstance we have a bad attitude about, and we forget a bigger picture. I was telling this to someone the other day. when we first came here, we were in an apartment down the street for a few months while our house was getting built, the house we're in now. But there was a delay, you know, the township, you know, permits, all that stuff. And they denied the permits. And so, oh, wait, we can't get the approval till next month. And then, oh, wait, we can't. And so several months delay. And I'll be honest. Here's the thing. I already had the lease on the apartment. And so they were going to charge me like hundreds of dollars more a month to stay in the apartment for a few more months because my lease had run up. So I was paying way, you know, like 50% more for this apartment than for the house that was paying. Oh man, it was terrible. And boy, I'll be honest, I had a bad attitude for a little bit, right? Till we finally got into the house, and we signed the paperwork, and I look at the loan that's finalized when the house was done, right? The interest rate on the loan wasn't locked in until the house was done, and realized if we had moved in when we had planned to, we would be paying another full percentage point in interest. The interest rate had gone down by a full percent point, a full point, in the amount of time from when we were originally planning to move in the house. That money, extra money I had to pay to stay in that apartment a few more months, no problem compared to a full percent less interest on the loan for the life of the loan. Wow, that was a great deal. But see, I was so focused on the circumstance, you forget there's a bigger picture. And I got to be in school that God was doing something big. God was blessing me through the circumstance that I was upset about. From God's perspective. And the final question, of course, he needs to ask that is almost obvious here. How important are people to God? Because that's the picture he'd gotten off of. He was despairing of his own life, and he was of great value to God. And he was wishing for the death of everyone in that city. And God mentioned, so read the end of our passage here. It says, and the Lord said, thou hast pity on the gourd. And then in verse 11, should not I spare Nineveh, that great city wherein are more than 60,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left hand, and also much cattle? I mean, I love it. It throws in the cattle, too. You know, maybe that probably rung home with Jonah. Maybe he was a cattle man and stuff like that. But hey, which is more valuable, a gourd or a cow? You ever said about the gourd, there's all the cow. Oh, wait, not to mention the people. And he's speaking, those that can't discern their left hand to their right, we're talking about children. There are kids in there. But even if you didn't care, even if you hated the people, aren't those cows more valuable than your gourd? I mean, if you haven't checked the market price lately, I didn't before the sermon, I didn't do my research. I didn't check what the price of a gourd was compared to a price of a cow. But I'm pretty sure that a cow is a lot more expensive than a gourd, right? And he's just really, Jonah, you're not thinking, you're not, from God's perspective, there's a big difference in value. We get upset over what a person did and how that person changed my circumstances. And we're not focusing on the value of that person. And that's what leads to arguments that tear households apart. That's what causes a bad attitude that sours relationships, splits churches, and holds Christians from moving forward. From God's perspective, what does it matter that he has a little sunburn on his head this day? The bigger plan is thousands of people have repented and aren't going to die and go to hell. And if God has to change my circumstances in an uncomfortable way, but because of that, I can see more people saved, I'm looking at it from God's perspective. Take the gourd. Send an army of worms. Send all those lantern flies. I don't care. Whatever it is that's annoying, you know? Whatever thing, and change the circumstances. If in more uncomfortable circumstances were just different circumstances, I could do more for the cause of Christ. Take the gourd. Send the sun. Bring that east wind. I mean, whatever it is, from God's perspective, he's being gracious. But Jonah's just sitting there, I want my gourd back.